Hello and welcome everyone. One day after KubeCon to Cloud Native, the good, the bad and the ugly. I'm very, very happy to talk to two amazing people that I met in basically only the last half year, which is really, really crazy.
Feels like it's been longer.
Yeah, so say hello to Jeefy and to Bob. Jeefy for the CNCF and Bob is working at Google, but we are mainly talking about the Kubernetes project and all of the adjunctance projects. So here, basically, Bob is with his head from the open source world and not so much of the Google head. So how was KubeCon for you?
Hi, Jeefy speaking, just because they won't know when we bounce the mic back and forth. KubeCon was really good. Amsterdam last year, I was unfortunately pulled into meeting after meeting, and I just had obligations. I couldn't really connect with the community, and considering I'm from the community, and those relationships, those friendships are kind of like, honestly, more important to me than my job, I would like to maintain those and make sure that the community is healthy. Couldn't really do that in Amsterdam. This time, it was much better balanced. I got to talk to everyone that I have missed, and it was fantastic.
Hi, Bob speaking.
Now they'll know.
Now we got it out of the way so people will know. So Amsterdam for me was a bit of a mixed bag because as soon as I got there, I happened to test positive for COVID. So I didn't actually get to experience it.
Yeah, right. I met Jeefy for the first time in person in Amsterdam and he was like, yeah, Bob won't make it. And then we had the sick infra meeting and it was like, Bob, go out of the meeting minutes.
And suddenly we have Bob like typing all the meeting minutes for us. And though it was sad for you, one of the greatest things was the shrine outside your door where everyone, like community members, are just bringing things to your room because it's like, do you need anything? Do you want lunch? Do you need anything to drink?
Did you got cheese? So brought people to your cheese and all of the bring home stuff?
Oh, there was a lot of stuff. And I certainly appreciate it. A lot of the times I was good for the most part. Like even though I was testing positive for COVID, I felt perfectly fine. I was completely asymptomatic, but people just kept bringing stuff and putting outside my door. And like, because I'm involved in running far too much than I really should, I was still sort of working and coordinating everything from my room. Thus, the sort of notes comment.
I think one of the other funniest things was the beginning of the Contributor Summit. I had come down. I was sitting outside the main area. I was talking with a couple event staffers. And then one of the event staffers that heard Bob had tested positive literally saw me from across the room, backed up further, and then was like, hi, Jeefy. And I was like, I'm not sick. Just because Bob's sick doesn't mean I'm sick. But, yeah.
By the way, did you get sick on the way back? Because you sat next to him, right? And also Bob and you were sitting next to each other in another plane. No? I thought so.
No, on Amsterdam, on one of the flights back.
Because on Amsterdam, I was in first class.
That's right. You were shmeeing it up. No, he's right. On the way back from Detroit, we sat together. But on the way back from Amsterdam. We're talking a whole lot about previous KubeCons. Chicago?
Yeah.
Was great. It was the best event I think we've put on this year. I have heard almost nothing but positive things. Some of the negative things we are trying to address, but like generally, really good vibes. And I've experienced them as well.
What I've heard from a lot of people was that there were more developers. Like it was not compared to Amsterdam, where like there were also like business people and stuff like this. Here were way more developers, which brought a complete other vibe to, yeah, the talks and the people, how people interacted and how deep the talks went there.
Yeah, if you look at the content that we put up, it was more developer and maintainer focused. Not to mention, we had certain events, and I'm not shamelessly plugging this. This is just an example. My little game show, Clash Loop Back Off. You know, it's like Iron Chef, but two people doing a technical challenge. That's a lot more of the content that we want to try and bring forward because it does build better communities, better relationships, and honestly, people learn better when they're having fun. At least that's my soapbox platform.
So actually, one note on that too, it's just like the day after we held that event, I was a special guest star on Jeefy's little Clash Loop Back Off people, like, I was working the Google booth, and people, like, I had people come over and tell me how, like, good of a time they had the night before. So, like, if that's any indicator, people really liked it.
It was full. It was really packed when I got over there. So I had sadly booth duty, and it was like only like, yeah, peeking around. But it was like really, really packed from a perspective of how many people were there and how they were engaged in it. I mean, you did also a great job like poking people to say like, hey, it's interactive.
What are you doing? Hey, audience, have you ever messed with Kubeflow? Hey, person, what is this on your screen? Like, the whole point of it isn't just, I want to torture two of my friends. It is also, I want the, you know, audience to actually see what they're doing, see why they're doing it. I want them, like, in the middle of the show, they can be like, no, buzz off, I'm busy, and that's fine. But more often than not, they can explain, no, I've run into this issue, I'm looking at the docs. A fun thing that happened was this turned into 10 minutes of watching two people read docs. And it's like, if this game show is meant to reflect what people actually do in their day job, I feel like it did a good job of that.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I'm really curious. So I think this is a good thing to have at other KubeCons as well, even maybe in some bigger format.
TBD. I'm fingers crossed. There may be plans. I know some staff have said, well, let's look at the data, let's see the retros and whatnot. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. And then you have other staff member that actually walked up there and were like, no, this was popular. People were engaged.
I mean, what is also important is like you have all of the ecosystem maintainer or a lot of ecosystem maintainers here. But it's still hard. Like, I mean, we had the AMA of the steering committee on Monday on the contributor summit. And I would not say it's like a play that is running like every time the same story, but finding maintainers or getting people to be maintainers is hard. We all can agree on this. And I think you also did a show of hands, like who's getting paid to work on those projects. I think it was like 2/3 of the folks.
I think it was actually more than 2/3. The majority of the people that are Kubernetes maintainers are either paid to do it as part of their job, or is it's kind of job adjacent, where, you know, contribution, like it might not be a direct thing, but they're still encouraged to do it, and it still might be needed to get something else related to their job done. And right now, with sort of the way, you know, things are in the economy and everything, everyone is having to justify how much, like, justify their time committed upstream and being able to do work in open source. And as someone that's tried to, you know, help connect the dots between open source and, you know, internal initiatives or like various business value type things, like it is hard. And it is like the way we do things in the project, and honestly just open source in general, we make it hard. And there are things we could do to improve it, but it's one of those things where we also have to like find the time to actually be able to do that. And it's kind of like the problems feed into each other. We need to step back and take time to work on being able to surface this stuff in a better way, so that way we can actually, you know, encourage or, you know, give the evidence that our, you know, contributing to the various projects is worthwhile and should be continued. But we are already very, very stressed for time. So it's like hard to step back and find time to do that.
Yeah. So from the CNCF perspective, I mean, you try a lot, Jeefy, to help the projects and yeah, help in every case where problems occur. I mean, how much influence or how much talking is being done with the vendors to basically say like, hey, maybe putting some resources on some projects might help the ecosystem?
Yes. We are constantly talking with vendors to both promote open source, but also promote the value of contributing back to open source. And the interesting thing is, at least conversations I've had with companies this week, more companies want to contribute to open source. Like, generally, like Bob said, and like we've all seen in like the last 6-7 months, it feels like companies are trying to pull back in open source. But I don't think this is going to be globally companies are pulling back from open source. I think new companies are going to see what these, I don't want to say legacy, but prior companies have done and grown by contributing to open source, and they're going to start filling the gap. So I don't think it's all bad, but kind of to address it, yes, we are constantly talking with vendors who both evangelize the software and evangelize the communities and evangelize if your engineers contribute, not only do you benefit, but you're going to grow better engineers. Like, it's a net benefit all around.
To, like, add to that, I'm not trying to be, like, you know, super, super, you know, down on this stuff. But I will say, sort of, when it comes to, like, the new companies and everything, once sort of things get through sort of the grace period of, you know, all this is great, contributing is great, that's when they start to look, okay, how does this actually benefit us? And, like, I think, you know, there is significant value in open source. And, you know, Gfy just touched on just the tiny surface of it. We just really need to find a, you know, better ways of surfacing that information. And it's actually, like, a great way for end users, honestly, to get involved, because they know the kind of information that they're looking for. Like, you know, what would they want to see, you know, out of us, like a release report or, you know, information about a new feature. Like, our docs are, like, for Kubernetes, the docs are, you know, considered, I don't want to say like a gold standard, but like a lot of projects hold Kubernetes as like some of the best docs out there, but they're also super, super highly technical and very, I don't know the right word for it,
already kind of involved.
Like, I don't know, but they don't do a good job of, like, if you're coming into it with little context, it's very hard to, you know about the feature thing that you want to do.
They are great in terms of reference material, and if you know what you're looking for, you will get the answer. They are not good when it comes to giving you a good direction to kind of take you to where you need to go. Another thing that I wanted to, you touched on end users and, you know, them being able to inform what projects may need in terms of docs and whatnot. Another thing that I think is not leveraged enough, and this is something we are trying to work on, but having these end user companies work more with projects, not just about docs, but also what features, feedback. Like, we're building project, well, I should say projects get built and maintainers come and solve problems because these problems exist. And on top of that, you know, if there are problems they don't know about, they're not going to solve them. That doesn't mean that they're invalid. It, like, your pain is not invalid, but if we don't know about it, we're not going to add it in.
A note on, like, the feedback type thing is projects are usually desperate for feedback. One of the big problems Kubernetes itself has is, like, you know, we don't have much of anyone providing feedback when a feature is in, like, alpha or beta state, and that's where we can actually change things. We only get the feedback when it gets to GA, and then people will complain. It's like, okay, that now takes, like, we have rules around how we can change a GA API, and it'll be a long time before we can potentially do that. And, like, if they get in, like, if they, you know, test some of the alpha stuff and provide that early feedback, like, it will be adjusted to meet their needs.
Also, I'm sorry, Mario, this is part of the reason I dragged Bob on here. He and I will riff off each other for hours. this is what the car ride is going to be like on the way back.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a good thing, right? So from our perspective, what we also saw, I mean, my company is doing a lot in open source because we are built on open source.
And you're awesome.
Thank you very much. But we get approached by end customers like, hey, there's a CRD that we are using, or there's a controller that we are using, and it's not working. Can you please fix this upstream? And I mean, this is nice, but we are not scalable, right? So this is not a scalable way. And what I started, at least in Germany, is like there are a lot of companies, and they are using the products, as you said, the end customers, and they are like, why should I contribute back to open source? Because it's not money. I don't get money out of this. And it's like always this argument. Yes, you do get money out of it because you're running your stuff on this open source software.
Yeah. And it, like, this is something that Bob and I have talked about. And Bob is far more like, he will talk about this more than me, and he'll probably riff off this in a second, but contributing to open source does not lead to direct dollars earned. Like, that is very true. We are not saying it doesn't, or we're not saying that it does, but it's very hard to quantify. I have written this patch or added this feature, which enables my company to do X, Y, and Z, which does generate revenue, or does save time, or does make it easier to support. And it takes a special kind of person to be able to recognize both the engineering effort that goes into it, the forward planning to go into it, and then the value that you get out of it. There are very few real champions in these companies that can recognize this is why we are here. This is net beneficial. Rising tide raises all boats, and there is value there. It is money. It's just not necessarily a line item on, you know, a financial spreadsheet.
Yeah, so actually, we benefit from this a lot, because as we chatted quickly before we started recording, was like, we had two job openings, and just because the people know what we do and where we do stuff, we had like 450 people applying to two jobs without having any consulting agency or recruiting any agency involved. And I think this could be stretched more. Like, this is a success story. Like, you can get people out of because you do open source.
Oh, absolutely. This is going to be a bit of a rant, and I need to somewhat temper what I say. But one of the things for years that I've often told people is open source is the fastest way to get a career in tech. I'm not saying it's the easiest. It's the hardest, but it is.
It opens doors for you.
It opens doors for you. It does multiple things at the same time. It shows and demonstrates your technical capability. It demonstrates and shows your ability to work in a group, and in a disparate group, and in a remote group. It also builds relationships, which, as Bob alluded to, opens doors for you. And all of this happens at the same time. But it requires work. You need to demonstrate you are actually contributing. So people that say, go, you know, getting into open source winds up being the fastest way to a career path, they're not lying, but also it's somewhat disingenuous when you aren't talking about the amount of, like, time contributing, time learning, time attending meetings, collaborating. Like, there is so much that actually goes into becoming a meaningful open source contributor. It will open these doors. It will help you get jobs. It will get your name out in the community. You will be recognized. But it doesn't come automatically. It comes as a reward or as a result of countless hours, days, nights working on this stuff. When you're passionate about it and when you're really good at it, that's when it shows. If you show up, attend meeting, and pat yourself on the back and think, I'm an open source contributor, you're not going to get very far. And that, I will call that what it is. Now, that said, the existing maintainers that are out there that see people that will show up, repeatedly show up, they are consistent, they want to help, they actually communicate, they will get mentored, they will get elevated, they will become the new, you know, higher echelon of these open source maintainers. But the people that show up just once or twice to a meeting saying, you know, hi, I would like to contribute. Well, you know, contribute to what? What are you good at? What's your strength? I will, again, trying to be nice, but we have had multiple people that I've personally seen that have attended a meeting saying that they want to contribute. They don't know the language that the project is written in. I'm sorry. I am all for helping you and elevating you, and I want you to be here, but also maintainers don't have time to teach you the core language that the project is written in. If you already knew the language the project was written in, that's a whole different thing. It's like you probably don't understand the patterns in the project. That's something that can be pretty easily remedied.
but I don't want to have to spend 3 or 6 months teaching you Golang. I don't want to have to spend 3 or 6 months teaching you Rust. Like, there is a level where you need to come prepared. Sorry, that was a bit. Oh, do you have more?
You summarized my, you know, Twitter rant from a while ago. The, like, coming there with intent and doing your homework is the easiest way to actually get maintainers to actually help you. And if you show that you have done your research and ask informed questions, most maintainers will actually bend over backwards to help you. They're just looking for, you know, people to take that initiative first because they're already strapped for time. And people that aren't willing to, you know, show that kind of initiative, they don't have time for it.
And people that show up, that appear and act and feel entitled, stick out like a sore thumb, and that is the exact opposite that the community wants to, you know, see join.
But the good thing is, what also should be highlighted is, even if you're not like the Go programmer, or if you're not the Rust programmer or whatever, there's so much stuff that needs to be done inside of a project that people are not necessarily aware of. I mean, there's also like, someone needs to do project management because obviously there's stuff to be managed, and also we need communication and documentation writers and stuff like this.
Yeah, I can say I pretty much fit into that category. I do have some programming skills. I am a Bash firefighter.
Hold on. We need a preface. I am interrupting you. You used to be an exceedingly technical person. You have white papers written. You were a technical person that evolved into a PM. Now you may resume.
Okay, yes. I am a very technical person. I dive deep into things. I just don't, like, I'm not a super awesome software engineer. I am a sysadmin by trade. In fact, in Jeefy and I's relationship, you know, he was the dev, I was the ops. So, you know, that kind of works. But yeah, like, you know, most of my roles at this point has been, you know, non-technical. It's been, you know, just organizing things, recognizing where, you know, there are issues and thinking of strategies of how to raise and tackle those issues and educating other people on doing the same. I also spend a lot more time looking at spreadsheets than most people would ever think.
The only thing that I do now developing is conference-driven development, and I'm not proud of it.
We're all guilty of it.
So you're fresh from university, and you say like, "Hey, I have some experience now. How would be the easiest way for you?" You would say like, "Hey, I saw the Kubernetes project, and I know a little bit of Go. I know this is the part that interests me. What is the easiest way to get into this? Or what would your first steps be to get into the project?"
For Kubernetes or in general?
Yeah, in Kubernetes or in general.
Find things that align with your interests. Mostly because, like, if it's not something you find interesting, you're just not going to, you know, enjoy the time. You're not going to be as passionate about it. So finding something that's interesting, and then once you find something that's interesting, find things that, you know, align with your strengths, or, you know, at least for getting started in a project. And once you find something that, you know, within a project that aligns with your strength, its strengths, it's then just kind of, you know, you can quietly idle, absorb information, but then it's, you know, start taking a look at the issues, start looking at some of the code, and, you know, build up your own knowledge a bit to then start asking the informed questions of the maintainers.
So this is going to be not exactly the answer to your question, but it is something that I kind of want to address. We'll get back to it. Someone that is fresh out of college and say they get an entry-level job at, I don't know, I will say Red Hat, IBM, Google, insert large, you know, company here. It's perfectly okay if at the end of the day, they are not working on open source. It is perfectly okay if they do not want to spend their free time working on open source. This is, if part of their day job winds up being working on open source and they don't want to do it after hours, that is more than acceptable. So the fresh out of college thing, you know, I wanted to preface what I'm going to say with, but that's okay if you don't. Bob and I, having worked at the University of Michigan for 16 years, something like that, a while ago, but still, we worked there for a long time. One thing that we continually saw were students that would kind of join and become mentees. They would want to instantly pick up an open source project. We would encourage that, but we wanted to, again, temper their expectations and make sure that they understood that, like, you need to continue to show up. We had a couple students that actually did show up. They graduated. Not only did they go on to have pretty good entry-level careers, but they stuck around in the open source community.
Yeah. So just backing up on that, the people that did actually, you know, stuck around and found their passion in this stuff, I can say one got a job at Twitch. Another got a job at Google, and another one, I think they actually left before they graduated and went to a blockchain startup.
That's right.
So I can't say, you know, I don't know how that one's doing right now, but, you know, that's still pretty, you know, pretty awesome considering, you know, path.
But, you know, a graduate, I'm assuming the graduate has at least done software engineering in college, you know, assuming you have the luxury of free time and want to work in open source, or at least want to kind of build into a career in open source, it's the same thing I would tell someone that doesn't even have a degree. I mean, commitment and consistency is the best way to get into open source, and that will open those doors for you. Full disclosure, both Bob and I do not have degrees. We just happen to work at the university for a long, long time. But, like, we're both college dropouts.
We both have our names actually attached to papers.
So it's like, we're kind of this weird thing. And so everyone's mileage may vary. Everyone's experiences are different. I know some amazing community members that have PhDs. I know amazing community members, just like Bob and I, dropped out, this is their passion, and they happen to be really good at it. It just depends on the person.
Like, there's also plenty of people that have, like, you know, degrees in audio engineering or other random things, and they just found their passion in software engineering and open source.
One of the best software engineers that I know, and he was a very core PHP maintainer, degree in English. Like, he was good at writing docs, shock. But then he just got really good at the language. It became his passion. He started thinking about it, and, like, he just had a mind for it. But his degree's in English. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is also good to say, because I have only, like, a half university degree, because I didn't go through the end, but it's something in the middle. But still, it's like, I learned stuff by doing stuff also in PHP and JavaScript and doing some open source work there, and basically one job came after another through just the open source contributions and knowing people. Or what I think is also important is being inside the community and doing, like, community work. So organizing a meetup, being at a meetup, taking the things that necessarily, I mean, we have a lot of introvert people in our field, and bringing them together and seeing that, hey, introvert people, it's fun for them to be around other people if they are on the same page, basically. And I think this is also a way to, help the community. And I mean, I saw so much happy faces on Monday, and I heard so much like, yeah, KubeCon is great, but honestly, Contributor Summit is basically the main reason to be around.
As a CNCF person, I am very happy to hear that one of our events brought so many people together and they enjoyed themselves. As a Kubernetes contributor, my experience at Contributor Summits before I joined the CNCF was the same. Like, the Contributor Summit is what brought us all together. It just happened to be that there was a KubeCon that happened after it. So.
Yeah, with this, we are pretty much at an end. Thank you for your time. Have a safe trip home. I think you go by car.
Yeah, we've got right after this, you kind of can see our room. There's a little bit more packing up to do. Then we've got probably 6.5 hour drive, and then we get to go see both of our mutual animals.
That's a good plan. So for me, it's more, yeah, a little bit more than 40 hours, and I will be back at the farm. So thanks, Chiefy. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And we see each other hopefully soon. Latest in Paris.
Yes.